of data sharing in the ag community.
So, first I would thank my co-authors on this. This is not necessarily a topic I was initially did not feel necessarily very qualified for, but then the more I immersed myself in thinking about this and talking with these other individuals, I kind of realized there were some experiences that I've had and some opportunities that I've had that I feel like perhaps helped me to be able to give reason for me standing in front of you today. So the real focus word on my presentation today is that word share or sharing. And so it's really going to be more conceptual, this principle of sharing, and really trying to address the question of why. There'll be a lot presented today that will address more of the how we do it or what we need to do and so forth and different platforms, et cetera, like we just heard. But I want to really kind of talk about why share data. And so as we think about that word, you know, what do we mean by share? And if we were to reverse our lives back to an earlier age, we might remember that very early on in life, as captured in this book that's been around for about 30 years, the first rule in this book was share everything, okay? Share everything. And then there were a whole bunch of other rules that went after that. But the first one was share everything. We're not there. That's not us today. As adults in our professions and so forth, we're not sharing everything. But the other side of the continuum is by virtue of fraud, identity theft, by virtue of the world we live in with different lawsuits and different different things like that, WikiLeaks, all those things kind of come to us and condition us to say, I shouldn't do this. That may be a vulnerability here that says I shouldn't. And I don't want to get in trouble, you know, with my organization. And so that's kind of the forces that are driving us on this other side that says, don't share. Okay. So we have on one side, youngsters, we maybe were taught, share everything, and now we're kind of thinking, maybe I shouldn't share anything. So kind of in that context, we do need to realize in the agricultural world that we live in, there really are, that data serves very different interests. And it's really having the empathy to understand and the willingness to try to understand those interests that kind of get us at a starting place to where we may want to consider sharing more. So with the producers, that decision-making is important. The autonomy, the ownership, the dollars, if it is valued, that's the interest that they have. For the ag industry, it's profit, it's competitive edge, it's sustainability. More companies are kind of seen as driven by consumers. They want to be able to say they are sustainable. So data helps represent interests at the ag industry that kind of captured on those things. Consumers, of course, they want food, they want quantity, but they really are, it's moving towards food quality and sustainability. So that's where the data is driving their interests. And then there's governments, and you know, governments are interested in stable markets and environmental protection and food security, and those interests represented by those kind of phrases. So here we have these, you know, very what seems like contrasting interests of these different groups. And then if you kind of put share in the middle of this, the easy thing to do is to see this as a four-way tug of war. And my thinking is, and what I would propose, is we need to do more to encourage, and we need to be advocates, those of us in this room today, for seeing this not as a tug of war, but as a connection to help us to work together. It's not a tug of war. It's a connection of sharing. So an example of this competing interests and how we might look at that, there was this little article that came out a few years ago, where learning approaches were contrasted by Cook and company, and a contrast of the scientist and the farmer. And on the one hand, you had the scientist focused on one or two factors for maximum clarity, but the farmers for multiple factors included for maximum realism. Intended to provide insight for all individuals, as opposed with the former, intended to provide insight for a specific individual. Deals with abstract, invisible attributes. The former deals with tangible, visible attributes. Hypothesis-driven with the scientist, outcome-driven by the farmer. Focus on accuracy, focus on relevance. Experimentation to address specific questions. Experimentation is a continuous learning process. Now, on the face, those look like they may be competing, tugging away kind of interests. And our mindset needs to be very different than that. It needs to be looked at the other way. It's a way to be able to use, look and see where there are opportunities for there to be complementary relationship between these interests represented by these different groups. So there have been a lot of meetings over the last couple of years that have been talking a lot about data and data sharing and those challenges that kind of are out there. And I don't want to go through the challenges because we've all seen these kind of lists. And so that's why I didn't animate through the bullets on this one, because I'm going to go past this slide very quickly and say, let's not focus on the challenges. Let's go beyond this. But we know that they're there, and let's not be in denial about them either. Why data share in agriculture? So the big question, why should we be doing it? Let's answer that question first. There's enormous data that exists today in our world, but in many ways it remains unconnected, and this was just discussed. And so in order for that data to really have any informative information with that data, it needs to be connected. We need to have improved understanding of the implications of food production systems in an ever-increasing connected modern world. We are getting more connected, but we need, relative to the food production systems, we need to see those things connected together for us. There's the whole concept of agronomic discovery out of complexity. That's why we need to be sharing data. And then part of that is to explore and innovate with hybridization of diverse data sets, such as the merging of public data that focuses on sustainability of food and natural resources with private data that focuses on income generation. So that's the hybridization of those different types of data sets that I think are going to create innovation in our knowledge. And then I believe that data sharing is really important to help us to build trust. Again, there's a lot of things in our world that kind of tug at us to not trust, to distrust. And we need to counter that with our behavior and with our professionalism and say, let's figure out ways to trust, that we are mutually respectful of those different interests, and at the same time then be able to meet those interests. We're going to build trust, and that's a much healthier humanity, okay? That's what we need. The real value realized when aggregating to communities and networks. And there was a presentation I saw last week by Terry Griffin at Kansas State. I love this example. So when Alexander Graham Bell invented that first telephone, what a great technology. And it was there. And with one telephone, it was not very valuable. You know, the value of that came only as other people had telephones. And there was communication opportunity that now has spread to everybody on the globe. And so that aggregation is an extremely important principle that we need to be able to articulate. Along with that, he said, you know, there's the primary use and there's value there, but it's not nearly as great as the secondary use. For example, in the precision ag world, farmers for one field, they have yield monitor data and to document yields on-farm trials, soil sample data for fertilizer decisions, for scouting, for spray decisions. But when you aggregate, then you get that secondary use of G by E by M analysis, regional compliance, regional analytics. It requires more fields. So the greater value is at their aggregate. It's not at the single field. So there's some data sharing benefits that I would like to articulate and then provide a couple of case studies to kind of help to illustrate these benefit points. First, it provides more comprehensive understanding of agronomic practices over diverse environments, and this was just also articulated. You know, there's this framework that we're talking more and more about the G by E by M, and there is so much complexity when we start looking at the genetics, the environment, and the management. And I, actually, this Brent, this goes back to you, but I think, but you maybe took it for someone else, but a few years ago we started thinking about that, and we thought, you know, it's even a little bit more complex than that, because the spatial and temporal variability, it can happen at each one of those. And so with that, you can almost subscript G by E by M with a spatial and temporal subscript. And so try to wrap your head around, you know, three-way kind of complexity is one thing, and now we say spatial and temporal, we're going to bring that into it. And that is huge. That is very complex, but that's where we need to be building data sets that help us to get at these kind of things. Data sharing creates understanding and connections between groups with competing interests, and I made that point earlier, such as between the researcher and the farmer. And so when you make those kind of connections, there is relevance. The scientist feels like all of a sudden they're doing something that's more relevant, and the producer is feeling as though there is purpose in that scientist. When you share it, you create an opportunity to grow it. And obviously, that's conditional on completeness, quality, and standards. The data shared can be reused to uncover new hypotheses when aggregated over space and time. The data sets that we are growing today, I expect, will be added to and will be used for many decades. And so it's not static. It's not used once. It becomes green. It's recycled. As organizations develop capacity and encourage data sharing, recognition, credit, and awards will follow. So with those kind of few benefits that I've identified here, I wanted to share with you some of the examples that I have from my research experience or others in the authorship. The first one is one that came out of a North American database. Back in the, a little over 10 years ago, a group of individuals felt like that they wanted to create some research plots in nitrogen and kind of wanted to aggregate that data. And we had a really rough protocol to how to do that. It went from Quebec all the way down to Mexico. And we had some guidelines given to it. But we pulled that data together, and it was the original objective was not very accomplishable because of some things we didn't do. But Nicholas, who's in the room here, you know, he says, you know, we ought to be able to do something with this aggregated data. And he did, and he pulled that together, and he was able to quantify the relative response of nitrogen, the impact of the soil factor for corn nitrogen response. And this was really helpful to start to really quantify that over a very large region. Likewise, he looked at the abundant and well-distributed rainfall or the precipitation. And he says, this is the impact. This is the core nitrogen response. And it's quantified now as a result of aggregating this data. And not only that, it's the soil and the CHU as corn heat units and the rain, the precipitation, and there's interactions between those three. Now, this could not have come out of two or three of, you know, individual states, really. It took the aggregated data. To the point of growing the data, Nicholas indicated to me that, you know, it was about 50 site years of data initially, and it's grown to something over 300 site years of information now. So it's a database that's growing. It's going to be used for additional analyses now. That's a great example of that. Case study two, aggregated on-farm data. This whole idea of aggregating on-farm data from farmers, it kind of leads to an ability to kind of calculate probabilities. And this probability idea is really something I think farmers really gravitate to and understand. They may not understand t-tests and f-tests and multivariate analysis, but if you put a probability figure up there in front of them and kind of point out things, this one, for example, on the x-axis, it's the change in corn yield or with a nitrogen increase from 100 to 150, pounds of nitrogen, you know, you're going to get a 5-bushel increase only about 50% of the time if there's less than 10 inches of rainfall in the spring. But if it's over 10 inches, that really increases. It's almost 80% chance of getting that 5-bushel increase. So you show this kind of thing to them, and very quickly they understand. I understand that. They like working in the world of probabilities. That sounds like risk. F-tests, multivariate, they don't understand that so much. This one here, my point here, I guess, is that at a single field or several fields, this kind of a pattern is not there. Farmers are not going to see it. Even over multiple years, they may not be able to see that. But I kind of wanted to capture this idea a little bit more with an image here. And so this is what they're looking at. But when they aggregate, then they start to see the patterns. Then they see. Okay. Case study 3, aggregated on-farm data. This is from the Iowa Soybean Association and Peter's work and the calculator they put together. Many, many trials on many, many fields. They can go in there, they can put a few numbers in there, and they can immediately see what's the probability of them getting enough yield increase with that application to not only cover their costs, but to make some profit. Okay? And that's aggregated over many, many fields. And that, again, that's the probability kind of idea that helps them in making that decision. Case study 4, it's a farmer industry public example in this one. So Sergo here in the United States is a soil classification system that we have, and it's good, but it's really not good enough. And so as a result of a farmer industry public kind of cooperation, here a couple years ago we started working, and we've come up here that was published earlier this year, this digital elevation model enhanced digital soil map that has a lot of that same information. And after that was generated, the question was, well, how do we evaluate that? And so we took that and we took yield maps and we looked at the variability within the soils as classed by Sergo as opposed to the soils classed by this, what we call environmental response units, and make sure we weighted it so that that the size of those areas did not bias the results. And the result was, and it was done over 409 fields with quality yield maps where you have farmers involved, DuPont Pioneer was the contributing and helpful, or it was the industry partner that was interested in this, University of Missouri, USDA, ARS, the group I'm with. And the result was that then we were able to, over a large region, be able to quantify what the value of that was. And there was about, whereas the Sergo only, on average, only accounted for, was able to explain about 16% of the yield variability. This new environmental response unit was able to actually account for about 25%. So that's not a huge amount, but it's about a 50% increase over the soil mapping that we've had in the past. Last case study is a public-private partnering. This is the one I'm currently working with, and a number of different states, and again with the DuPont Pioneer. And there is this question of what decision tools perform best for making corn nitrogen fertilizer rakes. Specifically, we really want to know where do these different tools work best and when do they work best, because there's a lot of competing interests out there saying this one's better. So we're out there trying to answer these kind of questions. So you have a data set that's being developed under standardized protocol, common design, common lab, over many different environments, compiled into one database with an agreed-to credit authorship from the beginning, and then that data is split, goes to the funding organization for them to be able to evaluate their proprietary product, and it's also going to the university partners and the graduate students for them to be able to do analysis on and generate some meaningful science. From the early on, we had a vision, and we kind of continue to kind of shape that vision, but we have a different kind of phases, understanding within the group. But at some point, our agreement is this data will be published and made available. We're going to share it. There's a certain amount of things that we have interest in, got to take care of first, but we will be sharing this data at some point. So I'm going to jump past this one. There are really some neat advantages for this public-private data sharing, but I think my time is about up. So I'm going to get to my last slide. What next to promote data sharing? We need more and more examples, case studies like ones I shared here, and we need to use those to show that there is really great benefit by sharing data. We need more specific guidelines and develop out of those case studies that we can actually share with young professionals and graduate students to say, hey, this is the way you need to be doing it in the future. And the professional societies, I think, can have a big role in helping to do that. We need data scientist training, including scientists that have analytical skills with that data. We need policy agreements and programs that leverage and balance this public-private interest. And I'm not sure exactly what that is going to look like, but that is something we need to encourage. Professional societies, I think, can play a big role in helping us to do that. And we need improved recognition, credit, and awards. And so I finished where I started. It's about changing the culture of sharing and recognizing that sharing and sharing data and collaborating and partnering to where that data is contributing really is going to make not just our lives more enjoyable, but more enriching, but it's going to make our profession a stronger profession overall. And with that, I thank you for your attention.